he bring you a bag that looks like this. That's awesome, huh? Now, the only problem is that that's what happens when you deconstruct a textile industry, right? And we used to make all that stuff here. And that's what we need to do again, right? That's what how you do it. And so that is my next bit of work. It's going to take me a few years here. But there's a lot of us working on it. And this is my next round of hemp. This is my hemp that went to, our hemp that went to and got spun at Battenkill Fibers, Battencourt Fibers. And then this is a couple of my sons and a hempcrete house at Lower Sioux with a solar thermal panel on it that my guys put in. And that, I think, is the house of the future. And that's to say solar thermal reduces your heating bill by about 30%. Solar takes heat and light, turns it into energy, and then maybe you turn it back into energy or light. But solar thermal just gets hot and goes directly into the house. When it gets around 90 degrees, a fan goes on, thermostat kicks off, fan goes on, puts warm air in the house. So what you want to do is figure out how to consume less, right? That's what we all got to do. We all got to figure out how to live a little lighter on Mother Earth. And y'all know that because you're here in Eugene, which is where cool people ride bikes. But my point would be, this is the housing of the future. That's my point. This is my house edition, with one of my girlfriends in it. And that is hemp panels that were put together in Bismarck. Hempcrete panels, 6 foot wide, hauled out there on a semi, the walls put up in 4 hours. That's the housing for the future, especially for a lot of tribal communities that need thousands of homes and have no trees. So I'm working on the Northern Plains organizing. Do you like my campaign title, Let My People Grow? And the very biblical and all? Anyway, this is what we're working on because hemp is still like dastardly, dangerous crop, which is ridiculous. If you really wanted to smoke my field, you're a complete idiot. So what is the lesson in this, you know? I'm just saying I come from a community that nobody would bet on. Is that fair? You know, everybody would say, no, write those Indians off. I ain't gonna amount to much. And then, you know, one day you look out there and you say, well, I guess no one's gonna fix that one for us, huh? And so then we just go and start fixing it ourselves. I guess that's part of what I'm saying. You know, this is what it is to have agency. This is what it is to take your power. This is what it is to, you know, to genius a Wabandaming, make that beautiful future, make that dream and make that beautiful future that you believe. And so we do that together. And we do that in community. We do that in our gardens. We do that in our housing. We do that as we teach our children. I mean, in the show of Washington, take your power back. Because it is ours. It is not theirs. It is our power. And, you know, as we move ahead in our work, you know, I came here to speak about the rights of nature. And what I want to say is that, you know, we declared the rights of wild rice in our territory in northern Minnesota. The rights of the river were recognized in Aotearoa, the Klamath River. The rights of mountains have been recognized. And in Ecuador, they enshrine the rights of nature in the Ecuadorian constitutional law. And a few years ago, corporations tried to get into some of the territory. The Ecuadorian Supreme Court, I think in 2022, ruled that the rights of nature superseded the rights of corporations. And, you know, that is really kind of, that's post-colonial law, isn't it? And that's kind of where we need to be going. You know, because what those old people always told us is that the Creator's law is the highest law. Higher than the laws made by nations, states, or municipalities, and one would do well to live in accordance with the Creator's law. And in our jurisprudence systems and in our covenant, reaffirmation of our covenant, the rights of nature is how we reaffirm that in law. as I close out this wonderful time I have with you and we open for some questions or we have some discussion, and I give you my love for being here today. It is so heartwarming to see all of you. Then just remember, you know, that it is spring that is coming. You know, this is a Zapatista saying or a Mexican saying. They tried to bury us. They didn't know we were seeds. And so that is really us. Be the seeds. Be the seeds. Be the seeds of whether it is the seeds of the food or the seeds of the ideas, the seeds of the heart. You know, be those seeds. And distribute and germinate them widely. Because spring is coming. And we will need to be those people who share our seeds. Because that is how change is made. And that is how summer comes and food comes to our tables and dreams come to our hearts. So Miigwech, thank you for your time. And I really appreciate y'all. Miigwech.
So we are very grateful that you're here, Winona. So we have some questions we quickly made for you. The first one being, you've been really deeply involved in resisting pipelines and extractive industries. How do you stay resilient in the face of corporate and governmental pushback?
Well, I come from tough people. You know, all of our ancestors had to make struggles. Some of us shoulder different things. We all carry different things. So just, you know, I don't want to say chin up, buttercup. Sometimes I say that, though. I'm just like, come on, let's go, girls. And then you reaffirm things with life. You know, you fight the bad guys, but then go do your ceremony, go do your dance, you know, bring your joy to things, you know, because they're all ugly. You know, their behavior is ugly. They didn't even have good music. You know what I'm saying? Like, I remember that in the pipeline battle, we would show up and we'd be like all dressed fabulously, right? And they'd be like in there like khakis, all uptight, jerk stuff, you know? I was like, they don't got no dance moves, they got nothing. So just remember, we got that, you know? So keep it and do it, you know?
As Indigenous students, you know, we're trying to balance the two worlds of academia and holding on to our cultural traditions. And what is some advice you have for Indigenous students trying to balance both of these worlds?
So my special trick is that I wrote most of my papers at Harvard on struggles. That was my special trick. I decided, like, if you got a Harvard education, first of all, someone's paying for that. So you better make sure that you get what you want out of it. And so it's really important that you're accountable for the gift that you have. And so I wrote a lot of stuff like that. And then, you know, I'm not very competitive, it turns out. I just, like, hope the creator thinks I did a good job. You know, so that's it. You know, just do your best. And then see, you know, like in this balance, and you could find it, you know, and then cut yourself a little slack. You got this chance at this college or this university, and you know, you guys get to learn, you get classes I never would have had when I was like back in the day. I want to go to school here. I mean, you know what I mean? It's like they got cool classes, so just go take some cool ass class about something you never knew nothing about. Just because that's cool, that's great too, you know?
What gives you hope for the future of Indigenous-led movements for environmental justice? How can Indigenous youth be more involved?
Did you see those pictures of my grandchildren? There you go. That's what you do. You bring them. You take them. I mean, they was camping at Standing Rock. Like, we all lived in different times. You know, I am someone, I was reflecting, I was writing an article on my mother and, you know, and how she influenced my work as a community organizer. And so I think about it, and I was, you know, not to go through the whole story, but like, community organizing is not a science. It's not like you get this many people sign petition, you show up this place. You understand what I'm saying? It's an art. It's so many things, it's a living being, you know, so many things are happening. And you need to be like on that, you know, in that moment. And so I was raised, you know, I watched Walter Cronkite every night announce the body count of Vietnam. I remember that. That left a mark on me. You know, my mother took me to demonstrations. I watched them crack egg on a guy's head in front of the courthouse in Medford, that old redneck town. You know, I watched that. I lived that. And so I saw people who stood in very challenging situations. You know, I was just in Greensboro, where I went to the Museum of Civil Rights and Human Rights, and they bought the dang Woolworth store and turned it into a museum where they had the sit-in, right? And so now we go there and you get to learn about that. And we bought, you know, the former Enbridge office in Park Rapids, Minnesota. They leave town, we buy their office, turned it into a museum. Did I say that? Yeah, right. Because we wanted to tell our story, called Gi Wei Dong Museum. That's where I work part-time, curator. But my point would be that you raise your children well and believe in them. You know, someone believed in us, right? Someone believed in us. And so I just do my best for that, you know, and then do as much as we can in our part to pass on as much goodness to them. And that also means take some arrests for your kids. I had charges in 4 counties a couple years ago. I have no jail this year. But the year is young. You know, take some charges for those young people. Take some charges for them. You know, that's what I would say. Because they're going to have a hard time. They're going to have knocks. They're going to take knocks, you know. And so I think about that, you know, and I think about how shameful it is to arrest elder women, too. But I was like, bring it on, guys. You're going to arrest us all? Go ahead. You know, but then just do your best for them and you know, teach them as much as you can. That's what I would say, you know.
So, having run for public office, what was your biggest takeaway, and do you think there can be political changes in the government?
Kind of looking like some tough sledding for a little while, but hang on. You know, and then, I mean, I think that there's some lessons. We don't want to go through the whole process right now, but we ought to get our act together, right? Y'all got that. Like, I am someone who has tried everything to make change. Well, I've been arrested. I've been to the United Nations. I've been to Congress. I've run for national office, signed every petition, been at every hearing, provided all the testimony. You got to do everything. Some of us have more, you know, of a stomach, we'll call it that, you know, or a gift for some things than others. Find your gift. Do your part, you know, whatever it is, because we all want to have, like, allies that are there, right? Allies that are in. So I believe in change in those offices, you know. I can't wait till Deb Haaland is the governor of New Mexico, right? And, yeah, you know, and then just look at, my God, look at Claudia in Mexico, huh? Y'all been watching her, the president of Mexico? I was like, go Mexico, right? So, you know, change happens in many ways. So just support that change and find your part.
I understand that we're all here because we have a connection with the land. We all have a connection with the books that you have written. And so a question I have is, how do you balance your well-being as an indigenous environmental activist? You know, you're not just an environmental activist, you're an indigenous one. And that takes a lot of well-being, your mental well-being, your spiritual well-being. And I just want to know, as an indigenous student doing similar work, it's tiring. And sometimes it's just so hard to pick yourself up out of bed and go to school or do all of this work. And I want to know how you keep yourself balanced.
You know, when I was a student at Harvard, there was this guy named Masilo Mabeda, and he was a South African national who was a political refugee. He was a member of the African National Congress, right? The same party of Nelson Mandela. His name was Masilo Mabeda, and he and I were students together. He was a graduate student, and I was an undergraduate student. And one day we were sitting there in Adam's house, and we had this pile of books, and we were having some deep political discussion about the ANC and the American Indian Movement or something cool like that, right? And this one guy comes in. You know, this is Harvard. This is called the Gold Coast, this house that I lived in, Adam's house. And this guy comes in and he says, Masilo, why do you work so hard? That's what he said to Masilo. And you know what Masilo said to him? He said, because you refuse to work. That is it. That is a part of it. It's like, we should not be doing all the work for all the students here. We should not be doing all the work for everybody. Everybody needs to do the work, right? Don't put it on all the native students to do all the work, right? Don't do that, you know, because we're busy. We got stuff to do, right? Support us. Support us in our work here. I've turned into a student again. But no, I mean, that, you know, that was a really significant lesson. But then, you know, on the other side of it, in my personal life, you know, where I live at the top of the Otter Tail River, which goes to the Red River, and I live in an ecosystem that is also the top of the Mississippi. I live at the top of the watershed. I live where the wild things are. So when I go to my daughter's house, which is on the other side of the lake, you know, pretty soon we're just going to canoe back and forth across, or in my, you know, my next round, I think I might just have a tin can to call her because I'm so sick of the cell phone. Anyway, so I go there, and every time I go there, there's like two otters that live there. There's some swans. There's like one heron. And people ask me sometimes, who do you work for, Winona? You know, they don't ask me that too much, but I say, oh, I work for that heron. So what am I saying? Like, we get to live in a beautiful world. And so my faith in this world is, and my faith in my responsibility is reaffirmed when I get to see that which is so beautiful. And so see that which is beautiful, because that's why we are here in this relationship. And restore yourself. And then make sure that you go, you know, hang with your people, do some good dance, you know, have some good salmon. You know, make sure that you do that. And life is good then, you know. And you all know the same thing. Or, you know, one thing I noticed, I have a lot of PTSD from all those cops. I found that gardening really helped my PTSD. I don't know how else to say it, you know. But just go and do that. And I tell young people, a hoe is a garden tool. We got to remember that. That's what a hoe is, a garden tool. And so that helps. You know, all that stuff helps. Okay.
Of all the projects you have been a part of and started, which has been the most impactful and important to you?
All those projects, you know, that is just my life, you know. I get to work on all kind of cool things, and different things are super at different times, you know, and are absolutely important. But, you know, over the course of my life, I seen we put sturgeon back in our river, right? And I look over there, and it's like 25 years later, and those sturgeon are having babies, and they're like all over. And every once in a while, someone says, I saw a sea monster in the lake. I was like, yeah, that's ours, right? You know what I'm saying is, it's like, what are we doing here, right? Bring back some fish, watch some buffalo come home. Swans came back to our territory, right? Buy back a lot of land. That was my therapy program from Enbridge. You know, we did the White Earth Land Recovery Project, and around 2013, I left them to go work on the Enbridge pipeline and buy another 1,000 acres of land now. I felt a lot better buying land, you know, seeing land go back for traditional ways and ceremonies. So all those things, you know, important. But I feel like that maybe one of the best things is that I get to hang out with people like you. But anyway, you know, the fact that you can share an idea and someone takes that idea and it helps them, that's pretty cool too. Because we all share with each other, and that's how we, you know, get to feel bigger in our hearts. It's been a good journey so far. Maybe I get some more land back and grow more corn varieties and hemp, right? And then, you know, right now, I'm on the edge of the new green revolution. That's what we call it. Because the green revolution was not so good in the end. You know that, like a lot of bad stuff happened. But the new green revolution, hemp can transform the materials economy. The word canvas comes from cannabis, right? You can make housing, you can make paper. And so I get to be in the revolution. That sounds pretty fun, huh? So I ain't done yet. I ain't done yet with that party, and I'm going to continue on. So anyway, thank you so much.
You were just listening to Winona LaDuke, Rights of Nature, an Indigenous View. She spoke at the University of Oregon in Eugene in March 2025. Winona LaDuc, an Anishinaabe elder, is an articulate representative of Indigenous perspectives. She's the author of many books, including To Be a Water Protector. This program is produced by Alternative Radio. We're an independent nonprofit in our 39th year. We're supported solely by individuals just like you. We feature such voices as Robin D.G. Kelly, Heather Cox Richardson, Russell Means, Gabor Mate, and Francesca Albanese. And we have a series of Winona LaDuc programs. To access our complete audio and book catalog, just go to our website, alternativeradio.org. Again, where we are podcasting, alternativeradio.org. For copies of today's program, Winona LaDuc, Rights of Nature and Indigenous View, and for her book, To Be a Water Protector, call us 1-800-444-1977. That's 1-800-444-1977. Or online, our website, alternativeradio.org. That's alternativeradio.org. Printed transcripts, PDFs, and MP3s of this program are free of charge. To get them, just call us 1-800-444-1977. Special thanks to Matt Laubach. Joe Ritchie is our general manager and editor. I'm David Barsamyan. Thank you for listening. We go out with Robbie Robertson, Wandering Souls.
Every year, over 1 million fires burn in America. Fortunately, firefighters are on the job, saving life and property, and you can be a part of it. 7 out of 10 firefighters and emergency responders are volunteers. There's no typical firefighter. Anyone can volunteer to serve their community. Volunteering as a first responder is really about having the heart and drive to make a difference where it's needed most. Your community needs you. Are you ready to answer the call? Learn more and find local volunteer opportunities at makemeafirefighter.org.
Hey, let's kick off this holiday weekend. Yeah, it is Halloween weekend. I, Paul the Monster, here on the Viva La Mock radio program, I'm going to hand curate, which I do each and every week, but this time it'll be Halloween-themed songs for the next 2 hours. Starting things off with, of course, some Danny Elfman. This is Halloween. From the Nightmare Before Christmas.
To see something strange, come with us and you will see. This is our town of Halloween.
This is Halloween, this is Halloween.
Pumpkins scream in the dead of night. This is Halloween, everybody make a scene. Trick or treat, till the neighbor's gonna die of fright. It's our town, everybody scream. In this town of Halloween,
when hanging under your bed, teeth bound shut.
Like snakes and spiders in my hair.
This is Halloween, this is Halloween, 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 Halloween.
In this town we call home, everyone hail to the pumpkin song.
In this town, don't we love it now? Everyone's home for the next surprise. Round that corner man hiding in the trash can, something's waiting now to pounce and howl your scream.
This is Halloween,
red and black and slimy green.
Monkey stir,
well that's just fine. Say it once, say it twice.
chance and roll the dice. Ride with the moon in the dead of night. Everybody scream, everybody scream. In our town of Halloween.
Lying in the night with a tearaway face. You in a flash and gone without a trace.
Jack might catch you in the back and scream like a banshee, make you jump out of your skin. This is Halloween. Everybody scream. Won't you please make way for a very special guy? Our man Jack is king of the pumpkin patch. Everyone hail to the pumpkin king. This is Halloween. This is Halloween. Halloween, 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 Halloween.
In this place we call home.
and it ain't till 12 till the party really starts. And I always had to be home by 10, right before the fun was about to begin. Crowds of people lined up inside and out, just for one reason, to rock the house. But in the daytime, the streets were clear. You couldn't find a good freak anywhere, cause
things come out at night. Things come out at night. Things come out at night.
Freaks come out.
Things come out at night. Things come out at night. Things come out at night. Things come out at night.
Freaks come out.
Things come out at night.
Now when freaks get dressed to go out at night, they like to wear leather jackets, chains and spikes. They wear rips and zippers all in their shirts. Real tight pants and fresh mini skirts. All kinds of colors running through their head, and you could just about spot a freak anywhere. But then again, you could know someone all their life and might not know they're a freak unless you see them at night. Cause
things come out at night. Things come out at night. Things come out at night.
Freaks come out.
Things come out at night. Things come out at night. Things come out at night. Things come out at night.
Freaks come out.
Things come out at night.
Now the party's jumping. The place is packed, and when the crowd's like this, I'm ready to rap. But before I could buzz around on the mic, freaks are all over me like white on rice. Freaks come in all shapes, sizes, and colors, but what I like about them most is that they're real good lovers. They do it in the park, they do it in the dark, but most freaks are known for breaking hearts. You can never tell what a freak is thinking of, and you may never catch a freak without at least one glove. They don't walk, when they step, they strut, and nine times out of ten, they drive you nuts. So take my advice, you don't stand a chance. Freaks are so bad, they got their own dance. So if you wanna live a nice, quiet life, do yourself a favor, don't come out at night. Cause
things come out at night. Things come out at night. Things come out at night.
Freaks come out.
Things come out at night. Things come out at night. Things come out at night. Things come out at night.
Freaks come out.
Things come out at night.
Put one. Put two.
We'll be right back.
Banshees wrapping up that first set of music here on the Viva La Mock radio program with their song Halloween. Came out back in 1981, and I'll be honest, I would have been surprised if Susie and the Banshees didn't have a song called Halloween. Before the Susie Sue, how about some Houdini from 1984, When the Freaks Come Out at Night, which actually, if you know that song, they're actually talking about like goth and punk kids walking around the streets back in the early 1980s. But you know what? I think it works for Halloween, does it not? Speaking of Halloween, some Ministry, L. Jorgensen and Company from 1984 as well, with Every Day is Halloween. Start off the entire set, some Danny Elfman. And this is Halloween, yeah. This is the Mockster. This is actually the Viva La Mock radio program as it comes to each and every week at this time. We are kicking off the Halloween weekend tonight, Friday, October 29th, with songs about or thematically with Halloween as the Mockster sees it. So I've got to play this one. It's one of my favorites. It's the Dream Syndicate from the Days of Wine and Roses. It's Halloween.
Why, even Dracula will be there. It's time for games, it's time for fun. The park is wonderful for everyone. The Dracolances are all in up. All the dummies are made and stuff. I just don't hear you to see. It's the time of year again. It's Halloween, it's Halloween. All the kids are happy and gay. There doesn't seem to be a crowd in their way. But when it's over and they can all live on, they wish that Halloween had just begun.
Man, you guys are so smart because you are listening to Viva Le Mock on WRCT 88.3 FM. And I am Peter Zaremba of the Flesh Tones. You're going to hear us on this stage.
from 1982's Plastic Surgery Disasters. It's the Dead Kennedys with their song Halloween, released as a single in December of 1982. Before that, the Woggles, released as a single literally a week or two ago. Brand new music from the Woggles with their song The Witch. Also played Fleshstones in there. Went back to the I Was a Teenage Zombie soundtrack because A, I've always loved that soundtrack, and B, always loved that song with the title track, I Was a Teenage Zombie. Shags in there. You know what? You're going to play a Halloween show. If you don't have the Shags in the set list, something's wrong with you. It's Halloween from the Shags. And speaking of actually that I Was a Teenage Zombie soundtrack, another song found on there. I didn't pull it off of there, but it's found on there. The Dream Syndicate with their song Halloween was also on their debut full-length Days of Wine and Roses. That wrapped up that set of music to get us where we are now, which is getting closer and closer to the top of the hour. I, the Moxster, am playing some Halloween-themed songs for you to get you in the spirit of the weekend. Speaking of the spirit of the weekend, January 1989 is when Lou Reed released his New York album, which featured this song.
There's a downtown fair singing out Proud Mary as she cruises Christopher Street. And some southern queen is acting loud and mean where the docks and the badlands meet. This Halloween is something to be sure of, especially to be here without you. There's a Greta Garbo and an Alfred Hitchcock and some black Jamaican stud. There's five Cinderellas and some leather drags. I almost fell into my mug. There's a Crawford Davis and a tacky Cary Grant. And some homeboys looking for trouble down here from the Bronx. But there ain't no Harry and no Virgin Mary. You won't hear those voices again. And Johnny Rio and Rotten Rita, you never see those faces again. This Halloween is something to be sure of, especially to be here without you. There's the born-again losers having DeBruzes and some crack team from Washington Heights. The boys from Avenue B, the girls from Avenue D are Tinkerbell and tights. This celebration somehow gets me down, especially when I see you're not around. There's no Peter Pedantic saying things romantic in Latin, Greek, or Spic. There's no Three Bananas or Brandy Alexander dishing all their tricks. It's a different feeling that I have today, especially when I know you've gone away. There's a girl from Soho with a t-shirt saying I blow. She's with the Jive 5, 2 plus 3. And the girl for pay dates are giving cut rates or else doing it for free. The past keeps knock, knock, knocking on my door, and I don't want to hear it anymore. No consolations, please, for feeling funky. I gotta get my head above my knees.
It's just insane. We have the most insane system of health insurance on the planet. We're the only industrialized country, the only developed country that in which the citizens of the country can go bankrupt or lose their homes or die.